UX of EdTech helps people design better ways to support learning. I'm your podcast host, Alicia Kwan, and I look forward to learning with you today.
I'm Karen Shapiro, and I'm a user researcher at Khan Academy, and I can't wait to tell you the story of Khanmigo. Our mission at Khan Academy is to make sure that anyone, anywhere in the world can get a free world-class education. So Khanmigo is just an incredible way to make that happen. For me personally, I'm a user researcher, like I said, and that means that I get to be the bridge between the people who make Khanmigo with the people who use it. I spend a lot of my time watching and talking with students and teachers, and then I get to tell stories about what I learned to our designers and our engineers so that they can make Khanmigo work even better for those students and teachers.
My name is Jonah Gold-Saito, and at Khan Academy, I'm a principal product designer. I lead UX for the teacher experience side of things. And right now that means a big focus on how we can make Khanmigo an incredible teacher's assistant, in addition to being an incredible tutor for all of a teacher's students. How those pair together, those need to dovetail really nicely. And there's a lot of integration so that the teams certainly talk and make sure that it's seamless. But I also come with many years of web and mobile dev experience. So I'm coming with a little bit with an engineer's mind, and I really do love bridging that gap and experimenting in that space between the disciplines. It's a fun place to be, and for me it brings up a lot of new ideas that I wouldn't have necessarily sourced otherwise.
Awesome. And we're here to talk about Khanmigo, and I'm really excited to understand more of the design and research and really the story behind it. So can you just unpack it for me?
Sure, I'll start. Khan Academy, we're a nonprofit, but we have a worldwide reach. And Sal Khan, who started Khan Academy, is just a visionary. He's connected to so many folks. So it was just a really natural connection for OpenAI to reach out to us when they were looking for a nonprofit partner to pilot their newest AI technology and come up with a case study that just felt great to everyone. For us, it was super exciting. Many of us at Khan Academy were teachers and school administrators, myself included, and we've wanted to solve the problems that Khanmigo allows us to solve for a very long time, especially in what we call historically under-resourced schools. So when the opportunity came up to solve those problems using this new technology, we just jumped at it.
Yeah, just to jump in there, Karen, it totally makes sense, because if Sal had this technology when he was first tutoring his niece and all of this started to come about and realizing, oh, wow, we can scale this up. People don't have to be coming home from school saying I'm bad at math. That then changes the entire trajectory of their lives after that, only because one day, one month, something came up. They got a little bit behind and they just couldn't dig themselves out of that rut. And they didn't get the differentiated and individualized resources that they needed at that time to give them the encouragement and support that they needed. And I mean, this tech, when it came up, it felt like, oh, wow, this might actually help us along that in an incredible way. So it started with a really small group of folks who are doing the initial design and development. But as the launch date drew nearer, it opened up to the whole company. It was pretty exciting. There was a full company hackathon, and really it was ground up, very organic. People put out ideas. I mean, there were big ideas, like how can we close the massive educational gaps in our country? I mean, massive things, right? How can we, there were things like how can we use multimodal AI around accessibility improvements, things that hadn't been touched in a while? How can we be the best teacher's assistant? Because initially we were thinking about it just from a tutor's point of view, mainly. How can we use it to celebrate students? There was so much. And we hacked for a week. And after that week, we things started to bubble up and we decided, okay, what are going to be our priorities that we're going to try to bring to this GPT-4 launch when OpenAI was coming out with their, you know, the big new what really changed so much. And it started really with a lot of prototyping and validation, and really a lot of it was prototyping in, you know, with prompt writing itself. And that was a big change. I mean, that was new to everyone. And there weren't yet all of the Twitter influencers saying, this is how you go about doing this. Here are the techniques. This is what a prompt should look like. This is the structure. This is how you get the best results. Here's how you chain them together. Here's how you inject data. All of that infrastructure, all of that best, you know, we were developing a lot of that as other folks were. So it was pretty awesome.
What time was this? Like what month or so? Do you remember?
We started in December or so. And it's really hard to believe that was just a few months ago, that so little was known about how to write the most effective prompts. But by now we have, you know, it's almost like all of Khan Academy split into a bunch of little startups with each one trying to solve a different problem. And at this point, we've got a product that works like a tutor in your pocket for individual learners, as well as a teacher's assistant for teachers. It can be used in whole class settings or individually by students at home. And so it's really incredible that in about, you know, 6-7 months, we've come this far.
Yeah. And I want to, so December 2022, that was around the time of the hackathon, or maybe a month later or around then?
The hackathon happened later.
I believe that was February.
Yeah. February. What was February like? Like, what was, you know, Jonah, what were you leaning towards when you were, you know, in the hackathon? What were you particularly interested in? Do you remember?
I was leaning into the teacher stuff. I really wanted to see if it could be pushed in that direction, if it could assess how students were doing, give recommendations, really be there as if you had a TA, or really if you had 30 kids, then you had 30 TAs walking around the room who a moment ago had their hat facing the other way. They were the best tutor possible. But when they came to talk to the teacher, they were putting on the TA hat and they were saying, well, this is what I'd suggest. These are the insights I've learned from my conversation. Here's what you can pull into your next lesson. Here's what maybe you should teach next, or what you should assign to this one specific student or this group. There was also some content creation things that I was really excited about that was new ground for Khan Academy, as far as I knew.
I was really grateful for Jonah's excitement about the TA functionality, because even though I spent 16 years as a teacher in some really challenging environments, the possibility of Khanmigo came up, I was just laser focused on how can we make this tool to help students. My big areas of passion were, you know, in the early days, how can we get this AI tutor to recognize the language and language complexity that students were using and respond in a way that not just matched their language, but also drove it forward, so that it wouldn't be talking to a third grader the same way it would talk to a 12th grader, or so that, you know, someone who is new to the country and learning English, like many of my students were, could jump right in and start a conversation and not feel that barrier. And so my focus was almost entirely on language, expression, teacher tone, clarity. And it really didn't occur to me how much potential there was for tools to help teachers until Jonah's group really started showing some designs. And I said, wow, this could be amazing.
And just to come back at you, Karen, Karen was she has always, from what I can tell, been an incredible advocate for learners everywhere. But especially folks who are not getting the support that they need and who are not being recognized for like their innate gifts being passed over by larger systems. And in doing so, she took on a lot of responsibility in overseeing, in the way that I think probably a lot of organizations got shaken up when this technology came about. And wait, who writes the prompts, right? It's not like, well, who writes the code? Okay, engineers write the code. Well, who writes the prompts? The prompts execute what would be millions of lines of code. I mean, you to write if then else statements, to do all those scenarios, it's impossible, right? This is a new world. And who is actually crafting that language? And within organizations, and you say, well, who's committing these? Where do they sit? Who decides when something's approved? It required that we create whole new structures, new infrastructure, new, you know, handing off the reins of a lot of things. And Karen was actually was doing a lot with another individual. I mean, you were basically overseeing, like checking off, making sure that what was coming out of Conmigo was really how we should be representing and supporting people. So I'm super thankful of that. Want to make sure that was recognized.
Ah, thanks. Yeah, the amazing thing about prompt writing is that it doesn't feel like coding. It feels like teaching. And so essentially you're teaching an artificial intelligence how to do things. And there were moments where it very much felt like teaching a three-year-old. Having to be very careful to spell things out in the right order and making sure to emphasize which is most important, because it does not infer that. And there were moments that felt like when I used to do instructional coaching and I would teach a first year teacher how to address a class or how to plan a lesson. And so for me, you know, I've taken one coding class in my entire life. There's no way I would have been able to create anything like this a year ago. And so having that opportunity was incredible.
Right. And if you give it too many instructions,
yes,
it's like, wait, which do I do? What is the priority here? You know, yeah. It gets confused. So there,
and just like a human, at a certain point, it stops listening to you completely.
Yeah. As you're describing that, I'm wondering what was Conmigo conceptually at first, maybe right after that hackathon, versus as you're learning, researching, iterating, what did it eventually become? And maybe we can even dig into some of the challenges you faced along the way in figuring that out.
I feel like the first big defining decision was the one to have two branches, the student branch and the teacher branch. In the very, very, very early days, I don't remember us talking about teacher support at all. After that, though, after the company-wide hackathon, we've really stuck with much of the initial vision that we had. And we've used a lot of input from current teachers and learners to shape it. So, for example, in one of the very earliest rounds of user research that I did, I got to show some of our early prototypes to a bunch of high schoolers in Mountain View, California. And they enjoyed the technology a lot and they grasped the usefulness of it. But when they got more comfortable and saw that they could really ask me anything, almost every single one of them wanted to know, okay, this is cool, but what I really wish an AI could teach me is why I need to learn this. Why does this matter? And we were so struck by how organic and frank that question was that we actually built in a little bubble for any piece of knowledge that Conmigo is explaining. You can now just click a button and ask it, why does this matter? And then Conmigo will ask you, well, tell me a little about yourself. What do you care about? And then it'll try to tell you why this piece of learning might make a difference in your personal life, not some generic explanation, but something that's actually relevant to you. And then we also, from the very beginning, Sal had a vision for debates, that you could debate an AI about almost any topic. We put a lot of thought actually into which topics, but at the beginning it was blue sky, and we let some of the high schoolers try out this debate functionality and go head to head with Conmigo. And one of the things that delighted them the most was the ability to practice nuanced, sometimes controversial ideas without being judged. They said things like, I would never have the guts to raise my hand and say this in class. It feels scary and risky. But if I know that I'm just debating a robot, I can practice anything I want and it's not going to judge me. And we thought, wow, that's incredible. Where else can we lean into the feeling of freedom and confidence that interacting with an AI can give students today? So those were two surprises. I don't know, Jonah, if you want to talk about more surprises or challenges, but those are two things that really struck me at the beginning.
No, those are beautiful, Karen. I love that. I'll jump into one challenge that I'm always having. And if you watch, you know, AI, Twitter, or any of these giant spigots of constant evolution, and there's just constant change, right? So if you're designing an optimum solution and you're in the Stone Age, you kind of know what the next 100 years will look like. you're designing knowing what the tools will look like tomorrow, certainly. Next year, there's a certain sense of the world changing under us quite constantly right now. And next week brings a new technology. I remember suddenly there was LangChain, and suddenly the changes are constant. And what that means is that when you're trying to think of a best possible scenario for your user, you have to make a lot of compromises, usually with technology. But usually those compromises are things that you settle with the compromise and you say, okay, the next time I approach a problem like this, it's probably going to be the same. If let's say I approach it next month, but when the landscape is changing so quickly, and you say, well, I'm going to make this compromise, but actually by the time we launch it, or even by the time I make a prototype, there might be a new solution. The thing that I really is the blue sky idea might very well be available in a month. So it makes designing actually it's wild and exciting, but it makes it a little bit hard to know where to set your compromises, where to set when to settle and when to push for, you know what, this might be around. Let's like keep this on the docket.
Mm-hmm. And then on a very nuts and bolts kind of level, there's that sort of rapid pace of technological change where every morning we wake up and we learn, what does the world look like today in terms of what's possible? But we're working to serve students and teachers who are largely in school systems that revolve around the school year. And that is a much larger unit of time. And we can't responsibly just keep changing the experience for them, you know, mid-flight. And so we have to balance the amazing new abilities that we have, you know, on a rapidly evolving basis with respect for our users and the time frame that they're operating in. And so that's been, we are doing a lot of work to wrap our brains around that and constantly staying in touch with students, teachers, and administrators to make sure that we're not just pulling the rug out from under them when we think, oh, this is going to be a great new gift.
Right, right. We got a great new rug, but meanwhile, they, exactly. They fell down because they're in the middle of their school year and about to assign. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I guess I'm also wondering, how do you balance this this frontier feeling, you know, of excitement, there's optimism. How do you balance that with caution, even foresight, an understanding, like you mentioned, of the school year, but even, yeah, more so caution about what could be happening in the future? How do you balance those two feelings, those two realities, and what have been those conversations for you both?
Well, at the, you know, eventually balance just becomes muscle memory, right? Like in dance or sports or, but initially to stay balanced, it really requires just a constant presence. You need somebody in the room. Hopefully everyone has somebody in their own head who's saying and checking in. Karen is a great person to have in the room for that case. just reminding everyone to take a step back, to pause. It's not just about the shiny new object. What are we really doing here? What are the trade-offs? But yeah, we work really hard to make it as safe as possible. There's lots of discussion, lots of docs. Some of those initial hackathon teams were only focused on, you know, putting together our philosophies. They weren't experimenting with functionality at all, setting our goals, what lines will we not cross? And that was super important. So, in addition, there was lots of red teaming. I listened to your interview of the Duolingo folks. I mean, I think anyone doing this responsibly needs to make sure to red team. And since then, and for anyone who doesn't know that, it's basically throwing everything bad at it to make sure that it does okay when you throw the worst possible things, when you throw weird edge cases, weird scenarios. And in our case, they're people from all over the world. So you have to do that in different languages, right? Mm-hmm. You have to do that with so many considerations. And since then, we've built out, you know, infrastructure to help us test that and make sure we can do that in efficient ways. But we've had to do that from the very beginning for sure.
How many people are working on Conmigo, would you say?
I don't know. That's a great question.
Across disciplines, or
I would say at least 150, because it's almost our entire company.
Got it.
Yeah.
We are over 200, and people are, just to go back to people taking on different kinds of responsibilities, some of our incredible prompt writers are people who were traditionally on the content team, and those were folks that were, you know, writing the math lessons, making new videos, articles, exercises, and pedagogical experts, content experts, and all of a sudden they're doing things that are, you know, way outside of what they were necessarily trained to do. And a lot of those folks were teachers before. So they certainly know what they're doing, but stepping outside of the comfort zone.
For me as a former teacher, it was incredibly cathartic to throw every naughty thing I've ever seen happen at Conmigo and see how it responds. Yeah, I mean, and as a teacher, I was an avid note taker and journaler. So I have books full of wild things you would not believe children can do.
Karen is holding that book right now for anyone listening.
What grades did you teach, by the way?
I taught everything from K through 7 with a couple of stints with older students. And so, I had range. And then of course, you know, it's not like that was just the beginning. And it took a lot of work at first to make sure that Conmigo could know which comments need to be shut down, which comments need to be responded to compassionately, and which comments need an email to the teacher immediately so that they know. And then expanding beyond that, like Jonah was saying, into different languages, different cultural contexts, you know, a certain phrase can have very different connotations in different languages or different places in the world. And you know, while we started with experienced teachers trying to break the bot, we quickly realized we needed to go far beyond that and kind of build an infrastructure that was ethically and culturally aware and also took in input, not just from students or teachers, but also from administrators and parents, because in order to be responsible when scaling up a tool of this magnitude, we had to make sure that we were including all of the stakeholders and not putting all of the responsibility of managing potentially unsafe situations in the laps of the learner getting the response from Conmigo or the teacher getting the email alone. That's not enough. And so we did a lot of Reading about best practices, learning about ethical AI development, which is a rapidly evolving field, and then on the ground level, interviewing social workers, parents, admins from different school districts to learn what is their sort of safety and moderation ecosystem like already, and how would they want a brand new technology to fit into that in a way that assured them that, like, yes, this tool is wild and new and conversational and has potential that nothing has had before, and yet it still has student safety at its core. So lots of stakeholder input.
And you're already unpacking this a little bit, but let me just ask kind of the next question here about advice. So advice to designers, advice to researchers, folks on the design team, anyone really currently exploring and building with GPT-4 and generative AI, how would you encourage them? What advice would you have in terms of people that are jumping into all of that and kind of going through the things that you're still going through right now?
I always encourage people just start writing prompts. And the cool thing is that you don't right now, at least with ChatGPT, which is using their currently, I believe it's still using their 3.5 model. It's not their highest end, but it gives an incredible way to test out those experiences in a super lo-fi way, right? Like as much work as it takes to make a wireframe, you're creating this insanely interactive experience. And the only problem with it is how unbounded it is. And your only job in like a wireframe, I guess, is to set those wires around, create some boundaries within which that interaction should be contained. And part of that is defining the persona of it, explaining who you are in relation, what you're an example of what you want back as a user from it in that scenario. And what you can get out of that very quickly, it's going to take a lot of tweaking to get to your final product, certainly, but that can be started immediately by anyone to make a new tool and to prototype a new tool and be on the path using the same stuff, the same nuts and bolts to your finished product. You just need a UI wrapper around it. I would just say get in there as soon as you can. There are a lot of people who talk about the best way to write prompts. And I know a lot of people point to Ethan Mollick. He's a great resource for that kind of stuff. Yeah, get in there.
Yes, get in there and follow Ethan Mollick on Twitter. But while you're doing that, I have to throw in my two cents as a user researcher. The counterbalance that I have to offer is, like, take the time to stay in tune with your users and their attitudes. There's a lot of excitement out there about AI and a lot of fear. And the range of mental models that people bring to AI is everything from, like, this is the solution we've always dreamed of, to, like, the robots are coming. And so understanding what are your users excited about, what makes them nervous, and where do they need the most guidance and support, that's really crucial. And I've noticed, you know, a tendency even within myself, as I learn more about AI, I get more and more excited about its potential. And I start to think less and less about how anything that I create is going to strike a first-time user. And so making sure to, like, hold myself back and test it out and actually watch and listen to the people that I'm ostensibly creating for, just becomes more and more important as I go. So yes, dive right in and also step out and look at what's going on around you.
Right. When you're listening to all the enthusiasts, I think it's an important balance that's needed. This is also touching on the last question. So folks, I listen to the Center for Humane Technology, Tristan Harris and folks, they give, you know, every once in a while, it feels like, you know, it's edging on reactionary, but they're really looking from a humanist point of view and making sure, are we just building something to build something? Are we just building the next most, you know, fastest car? Or are we building something that's actually going to be a better world for humans to live in? And that is definitely a lens to keep returning to as you're working in this space. I mean, where we are, without a doubt, when you have 150 million learners worldwide, you cannot take the philosophy of, you know, go fast and break things, right? That's just not an option. So yes, build and keep your ears open, be responsible.
It's really, really good advice. What's the future for Conmigo? Since, you know, it's so easy to predict these things, but what's next? What are you all excited about? What are you working on?
Well, I feel like I have to start with the disclaimer that, you know, I can tell you right now, but you should have us back on this podcast next month because it's going to be totally different. So, you know, even in a world where everything is changing so fast, though, what I'm most excited about is just the potential for inclusivity. AI is so flexible and so responsive that I can't wait to learn how to harness it better, to add more modalities. So like a voice modality for people who just struggle or don't want to type long paragraphs, whether that's because they're young or they have accessibility needs, or they're just really busy college students or teachers on the go and they'd rather use their voice to interact. That's going to be huge. And support for mobile. Right now, Conmigo is available on desktop only, but we are rapidly building out our mobile functionality so that learners can use it at home with their families. In the United States, the vast majority of students in historically under-resourced schools don't have desktop computers at home. I taught at a school where I had 400 students and two of them had computers at home. Almost everybody else used phones or tablets. I can't wait to create functionality that'll let them use Conmigo at home. And then, like Jonah has been saying, we have lots of users in countries where a phone is much more common than a computer. And so mobile is just another important element of inclusivity, even though we don't always talk about it. So those are two changes I'm really looking forward to.
Something that I've been really excited about for a while now, and I've gotten to run some design sprints on. It's been really fun. And now we're actually building out our experience that really break outside of the chat box. So how can you have this thing that's not just a backseat driver that is talking about the page or telling you to do something in the page, but is right there with you as an agent, is working on the same surface you're working on, whether for a teacher, which is my space, co-writing lesson plans, your learner co-writing an essay, there's a lot of new UX interactions and patterns. And for any designer, that's going to be exciting, right? That's going to be an exciting new time, because how often do you get to do that? But yeah, that time is now. So, I mean, folks who have the opportunity to get into this, back to that dive right in mentality.
Thank you both. This has been really, really interesting for me, and I share the excitement about the future. Loved some of the examples that you were sharing. If listeners want to jump into Conmigo or just follow you and your work, where should they go?
All right. Well, we're going to start with Conmigo because that is the real star of the show. You can yep. always go to khanacademy.org and click Get AI Guide to learn more about it. You can also follow Khan Academy on Instagram or even search for Conmigo on LinkedIn. Those are some ways to learn about it. And if you want to learn, just connect with me as a human being. I'm Karen Shapiro, and you can find me on LinkedIn.
Yeah,
I appreciate the distinction between AI and then you as a human being.
there is still a distinction, maybe not in a few years, but as of now, there's some firm lines And so I'm Jonah Goldsaito again, and I'm the only person in the world with that name. I'm on LinkedIn under that name, also on Instagram and other places under JG Makes. So yeah, I'd love to talk with anyone who's excited about this stuff. Feel free to hit me up.
Thanks for listening. If you're interested in growing in your understanding of UX in the edtech space, we offer a number of resources that could help, including articles, a community Slack, and learning events. There are two main ways to access that, our LinkedIn page and our free newsletter. Check the show notes for ways to connect. This episode's theme music is by the band Sleep Still. UX of EdTech helps people design better ways to support learning. I'm your host, Alicia Kwan, and I look forward to learning with you next time.